Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Like what you're hearing, if you're picking up what I'm putting down, you can join me on a live weekly call to talk about your next short-term rental or ask questions about the one you already have. I am live once per week on Zoom. I would love to have you come and say hello. It's strquestions.com. That's strquestions.com. Come and join us.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. Today, I have a very cool guest. We have the co-founder and COO of TechVestor, Sabrina Guler. How's it going, Sabrina?
Thank you so much for having me. Super excited to be on.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. So let's start by you just telling us a little bit about yourself, how you ended up founding TechVestor, and then we'll get into more what TechVestor is.
Absolutely. TechVestor is one of the only short-term rental funds out there that offers a passive opportunity to invest in short-term rentals. And we started the business about 2.5 years ago. This year will be our third year. It's crazy saying that out loud. I started the business with my business partner, Seif, who I believe was also on the show a little while ago. And we both have tech backgrounds. I come from working at Apple, and he has a background working at Facebook. And we both had experience investing in short-term rentals, but we had a much larger vision to streamline that and make it bite-sized and passive for those who want to get into it but don't want to do all of the work. And so I was working at Apple. He was working at Facebook. We both decided to take a very risky leap, quit our jobs, and start this fund. And it's been a really wild journey ever since. I think to date, we have around 140 properties. We've raised a little over $73 million and we're still actively raising. And we've learned a lot along the way. My main role is I act kind of as the COO. So I focus on like all of our operations, all of our construction, our renovations, our design for each property, and our property management since we have that in-house. So anything related to pillow selections all the way to supplies, to replacing roofs and HVACs and managing teams and people on the ground is something that I have gained expertise in the last couple of years.
Sounds like a lot of expertise in the last few years. And I don't think I've heard of any other company successfully syndicating short-term rentals on any scale, especially the scale that you guys are doing it. So great work on, I think, first to the space, really. So that's pretty cool because I think it's difficult to syndicate single family homes. So I'd love to hear how you guys have kind of been able to build this, like what markets are you guys in? What are you focusing on in terms of choosing markets, that kind of thing?
Yeah. And it's sometimes when I jump on these podcasts, I realize like how quick and easy my like 30-second intro is. And it's been so much harder than we make it seem. Truly scaling this business is not an easy, has not been an easy path. And I think it comes down to three different things. I love to preach that the short-term rental business is not only real estate and it's all about the details, and it sits more in the hospitality camp. I think one of the hardest things, I think for anyone in the short-term rental space, is to get that reality check that this is not in fact a passive investment and it's very active, and it requires you to, you know, maybe ruin a couple of dinners with your significant other on a Friday night, or spend a little bit more money than you probably anticipated on little things like batteries, or sending someone over to a property, especially if you're in a remote location, or making the right investment decisions up front on the renovation side so that you have a longer trajectory before you hit having to get into your CapEx or your reserves. And I think at TechVestor, we learned all those things upfront, and we learned them very quickly. And it was And it was totally a timing thing, but it was also, we knew that we had to pivot very quickly. And so as we scaled, we learned those decisions, those hardships, I would say. And over time, things, I want to say they became easier, but they became harder and easier at the same time. Harder in the sense that our problems became bigger and we needed more people to jump in and be hands-on, but easier because we knew that the problems typically repeat themselves. And if we put solutions in place, we would be able to scale. And so I think that that's kind of what allowed us to grow and do what not many people have done so far to date.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. So it's 140 properties. Okay. Yeah. That's a lot of properties. So how many markets does that span?
So we're in I believe to date, we're in about 9 to 10 markets, and three of them are our heaviest markets. So we're pretty dense in those top three markets. That's Scottsdale, Clearwater, Florida, and then the Poconos, Pennsylvania. And then we have like our second tier density markets where we have, so the first tier, those three markets that I mentioned, we have 30 or 40 properties in each. And then our second tier, we have like 10 to 15 properties in, and then we have a third tier. And that's like, we might have like 3 properties or 4 properties. That's how our portfolio is structured today. And I think as we get bigger, we add properties in each of those pockets, in each of those layers, because it's easier with economies of scale to get pricing and all that. But we are very selective with our markets for a reason, obviously being data and investment focused. And we're always looking for new markets, but those are the markets that have been lucrative and easy enough for us to scale in.
I'm a big fan of adding existing. Well, I think, let me back up. A lot of people, one of the biggest questions that I get asked as an agent with multiple markets is, okay, I've bought one. Should I buy another one here, or should I buy another one in another market? And it really is, depending on how big you want to scale, much easier to just add properties to the systems that you've already built in the markets that you're already in, rather than going and getting into another one. And I'm a big fan of Scottsdale personally, and that is one of the markets that everybody loves to use that oversaturated word with. So I would love to hear how that has affected or not affected you guys, and if you find that to be the case, because I found to be the case a lot of times, saturated or quote saturated, they may or may not be, but the ones that have a lot of short-term rentals are actually great markets, because the reason there are so many rentals is because the demand is there. So I'd love to hear how you guys have navigated that, if that's even been something you've had to navigate.
Oh yeah, we get that question all the time. And I think it's such a great question. I think that a short-term rental business is such a big business in the sense that how it's categorized and where you fit, like where you're positioned, what you're buying, essentially what you're arbitraging, it fits into a certain bucket, right? So like the tiki huts and the yurts, it's not even like, it's completely different from what we purchase. We purchase large single family homes that are 3 to 6 bedrooms. And really we focus in on that 4 to 5 bedroom count. And our whole mission and what we focus on is we provide amenities and an experience for families, large shared families, to have enough in the house so that they don't have to leave the house. So they can create memories in the house. They're happy in the house. They can be inside, outside, both have amenities. And if you just look at that category, and then you also take it one step further and you compare it to the people on Airbnb who are offering a professional service that's backed by a company, or it's just mom and dad who, you know, rented out Joe's basement, it's another layer of complexity that also thins out our competition. So when you, I don't remember the exact numbers, because someone on our team the other day mentioned how Scottsdale has like, I think it was like 30,000 total listings, but the total amount of people that are operating as professionals who are in our bedroom count with similar amenities, it dwindles down to like only like a few hundred listings. And in that listing count, we are like operating at like the 95th percentile. So when you go on Airbnb, and I play this game all the time when I meet with like fund managers and investors, I'll like pop open Airbnb completely as like an unregistered user, and I'll like pull up Scottsdale, and all of our homes are listed on the first page. And it's because people who come to this area, they look for amenities, they look for large homes, they look for big lots, they look for, you know, places where they can go play golf, go hang out with the family, come back to the house, and like have everything they need. And so when you look at that competition, when you look at like, when you just clear all of the noise, you realize what's really important. And at the end of the day, people, I think, are prominently shopping for a few things out here that are gonna spend the money that we are targeting in terms of like average ADRs. And so we kind of just focus on that. So is there competition? Yes. Can you still beat the competition? Absolutely. But it's gonna require you investing into specific amenities and buying larger homes in whatever market people are shopping for those particular things. So
yeah, I totally agree with that. You're not competing with if you're managing well and you're buying the right property and you're not, I call it not shopping in the bargain barrel of like scraping the bottom of the price range for a certain bedroom count to where you're buying a property that nobody's really going to want to rent because the aesthetic isn't there, or maybe the location isn't right. So if you're buying the right type of property and managing it well, like a professional, you're not actually competing with the entire market. You're competing with a very small amount of listings. Cause like you said, there's going to be X amount of mom and pops that don't really know what they're doing. There's going to be X amount of, you know, maybe professionally managed, but maybe they have bad pictures, or I don't know how it is in Scottsdale specifically, but here on the Emerald Coast where I live, where it's a very, very mature vacation rental market, there have been big property management companies here since the 80s, and they all have tons of listings, but they're still doing things the same way they did in the 80s. So yes, it's like technically professionally managed, but it's also not well managed. So, you know, this is an area that people say that about too. Oh, there's so many rentals, but so many of them are just not done correctly, whether that's through management or just buying something weird.
It also depends on like how high maintenance your guest is. Like here in Scottsdale, people, I think there's a very, for anyone who's getting into the short-term rental space, especially with what's out there with education, you see a lot of people talking about like cute furniture and Wayfair and like a mural. And then you can spend all of that. And we actually did that. That's one of the mistakes that we did. We thought of purchasing with those eyes. And then we realized that no one gives a shit about that in Scottsdale. And everyone wants to, you actually have to spend money in the yard. And that's where all of your money goes, right? Like the hot tub, the pavers, the string lights, the pergolas, like that adds up. That's like 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 grand at the minimum. But you will make that back in, especially, I don't know what time you know, people plan on launching, but like, for example, we're entering peak season here, February, March. We have $20,000 to $30,000 a month averages here at our property. Some of our properties will hit that higher 200 range in annual rev. And it's because of the yards. And people could, I mean, like, sure, the insides matter. I think the occupancy matter, cleanliness matters. People want to know that like all the kids could fit, or like the beds look clean and the bathrooms look clean. But for the most part, people care about the yards. People pay for the yards. So I think it's like, it's all about the market.
Did you know there's actually a company that will help you find and purchase your first or next short-term rental? The Short-Term Shop is the premier short-term rental acquisition company. They have a team of realtors with tons of experience, and most of them actually own their own properties as well. They are the best in the business and would be happy to help you with your next purchase. You can find them at theshorttermshop.com. Brokered by EXP. Theshorttermshop.com. This episode is brought to you by the premier short-term rental Facebook group, Short-Term Rental Long-Term Wealth. We have nearly 50,000 members. This is the biggest independently owned and operated SCR Facebook group, and it has been curated by yours truly, Cashflow Carl. Join us on Facebook. Search the groups for Short-Term Rental Long-Term Wealth. That's Short-Term Rental Long-Term Wealth on Facebook.
So when you guys are going into a new market, or it sounds like you guys are kind of established in your markets that you're going to stick with for a while. So are you looking mostly at amenities and what's attracting guests in that market when you buy something? Are you looking, I mean, I guess you kind of have to look at the whole picture of price, what it's going to cost you to add these things, and how do you figure out what those different things are within the different markets?
So I'm going to make something so complicated sound so easy. We have two people who on our team, they're incredible people, and they that's that is what they focus on all day long. They are literally in the weeds with a fine tooth comb going through what markets we should buy in and why, and what amenities are popping up in all the markets and why, and why do people care about them? For example, we just A/B tested a few months ago whether or not outdoor bowling would convert. And outdoor bowling is actually not very expensive. Like, you need some pavers and you need some quiet, like, you know, you need quiet pins and quiet balls because you don't want to like play outdoor bowling and then piss off your neighbors. So there was some research that we did up front, and we tried this out on a couple properties and it did really well. Like, and it's really not that crazy of an investment. So we look at what other people are doing, but also another thing too, I'm sure you're familiar with this. You go on like AirDNA, you go look at your competition, and your competition is either like super, super luxury, like the interior kind of sucks, but like the house is a $2 million house and it's pulling like 400 grand. Or you have like the middle of the tier road, middle of the tier amenities, they're pulling like 80 grand. Most people who enter the Airbnb world are like, oh my God, I can make 80 grand. I can make 100 grand, right? With these like basic amenities. And then you have people who are like in the middle of those two, and you could see that they've spent money and they have like nice yards and murals and they're the bachelorette homes. And we look at all of it. So we'll look at why are they only doing 80? Why are they making 400? And we'll buy the houses that have those a la carte amenities. And we kind of turn the market into what we believe could be the top performing. And so far, that's how we've been able to outperform certain markets, because we're pulling different amenities from what has worked. And really because there's no industry standard, right? Or there hasn't been. So yes, we have a data team. Yes, we look at amenities, but we really go in there humbly and we're like, okay, why is everyone doing well? And let's go and do that ourselves and test it and try it.
Awesome. So let's talk about the investor side of things for a minute, because I think a lot of people get really excited about short-term rentals, as they should. It is the most fun type of real estate to buy. So I've got 8 short-term rentals and 242 long-term rentals, and it's way more fun to mess with the short-terms than, you know, a 12-unit apartment building in middle America. It's just boring. It does what I need it to do, but it's not fun. But that being said, 50% of all investments, whether short-term, long-term, et cetera, are sold within the first 2 years. So I think a lot of people are like, oh yeah, cool, I'm going to do this. And then they realize maybe they don't like people, which is a thing because it is a hospitality business and they don't want to deal with people, and it's interrupted their dinner one or two too many times, and they don't plan on scaling big enough that that's something that they want to deal with. So a company like you guys might be a good opportunity for someone like that to invest with. So what does that look like for you guys, clients or customers? I don't know what you call them over there.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think people look at this like a fun opportunity, and I don't think people understand how exhausting it is and also how intricate it is to like really look at data and market and make sure that things are actually going to convert, at least for whether or not it's worth it. If you look at a lot of multifamily investments or other investments that are less risky and have average middle of the road returns, sometimes those investments are better for other people in terms of like being active, because, you know, your time has to be factored into all of this. And so for TechFester, we offer a passive investment opportunity. The minimum is $25,000. So as a retail investor, you could put $25,000 into our fund, and our, you know, our mantra is like, we do all the work and you invest, and you can collect returns passively quarterly and be a part of this asset class without having to do anything yourself.
That's awesome. And so do you hold these indefinitely, or is there like an exit path X amount of years down the road?
Our goal is to, well, and we always tell investors, you know, hey, we don't know what the market's going to look like in a couple of years, but we truly believe in this asset class. We believe that, you know, there is an opportunity for this to really emerge as an asset class and have similar cap rates, or have an opportunity to have like that commercialized aspect to it, like a multifamily or like a storage, obviously with a different appetite to risk, right? This is definitely a diversified and an investment opportunity. It's not the standard, but we, Our plan is to sell at some point. Originally, when we started the fund, we were looking at a 5 to 7 year hold, and we will continue to have that perspective. But obviously, it depends on the market, and we'll do whatever is best for investors. So for right now, it's a buy, it's a hold, and it's a rent. But obviously, if we sell, investors will, you know, they'll definitely do well in that aspect. And if we hold, you know, we're focused on cash flow first.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. And let's switch gears for a minute and talk about your Something More podcast. So how has Something More, the idea of that, influenced your career?
So I am, you know, having a W-2 background, I was always looking for more in my career. And I think having like a type A personality, I was always looking for the next thing to chase. And I think the investment world has given me so much from a learning aspect. I feel like I learn something new every single day in this world. And I'm sure you do too. Like the short-term rental, it's always growing. There's always new players. There's always new people in the space. And so because I'm so passionate about growing both personally and professionally, I started a podcast for people who are also looking for something more in their lives, and to really bridge the investment world with that introspective inner fulfillment world. And so Something More is for those who are interested in investing in the short-term rental and in the real estate space, and they either want to buy their time back, they want to learn about how passive investing can open their lives to more, and they're looking for more fulfillment in both their professional and personal lives.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And my W-2 background was just A, soul sucking, and B, it just wasn't for me. Working for other people just was not for me. I'm not a good employee. And I found that out relatively quickly after my master's degree. It was like 3 jobs in 3 or 4 years that I was like, man, this is not, I can't do this. So I think that, you know, that's definitely a podcast I would have listened to back then and now for real. But especially when you're somebody who is in a W-2 and you're really trying to, which is what a lot of our listeners are trying to transition out of that through investing in real estate. I think that, you know, knowing your, because I felt like I was being the stereotypical millennial who doesn't want to pay their dues or whatever, but really it just was not for me. And I think a lot of people are feeling like that and want to, you know, know that there's other people out there that feel that way too. And they're not alone in that.
Someone made a joke the other day and I thought it was so funny. It's like, you're not actually a millennial until you have no hobbies because you converted them all into side hustles.
Maybe that's true. Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I don't disagree with that because I'm sure when you were looking for your version of Something More, like you were trying to find something that fits, you know, like I think being in the W-2 world, you're like, how am I going to pay health insurance or take care of my family? You're like, how am I going to feel stable in all of this? And so you're like trying to grab any hobby or anything that like fills that. So I definitely have been there before, but it's definitely a millennial thing.
Yes, I think so. I think so. And I got towards the end of my career, what really did it for me was I worked for a small music publishing company and there were only 6 people in my department. And I got passed over for a promotion. Somebody left and it was going to be like the only one for the next 5 years. So I was like, you know what? I'm out of here. Clearly I'm not valued. I'll go create value for myself.
Totally. Yeah. I feel that.
So is there anything else about TechVestor, circling back to that, that we didn't cover or that you feel like our listeners might benefit from hearing?
I think at the end of the day, the short-term rental world is so dependent on data, but equally it is one of the most emotional asset classes or investment opportunities for people to get into, because a lot of people can go and buy homes and make them into what they're, you know, what they want them to be and turn them into an Airbnb. And I will say that if like you're on the fence of buying your own or investing in short-term rentals, and you're thinking of partnering with other people, just make sure to do it with people who really know what they're doing and don't have an emotional attachment to the investing world. There's a lot of competition out there. There's a lot of saturation out there. There's a lot of people entering the space every single day. And I think the less emotional and the more data and business driven you are, the more success you'll have in investing in the right property, investing in the right market, investing in the right amenities. And, you know, having that conversation with yourself to be like, hey, this really is hospitality on top of real estate. Like, do I really want to do that? And I think that's, you know, what made a really successful friend of mine asked me a really hard question when I was leaving Apple. And he's like, so you're going to buy 10 of these and they're each going to make $100,000 a year. So basically you're leaving Apple to be a property manager. And I really had to like ask my, I said to sit back and be like, is that really what I want to do? Do I want to like leave my engineering career like for hospitality? And the answer was no, I wanted to do something bigger. Right. And so I think asking yourself those long-term questions really help craft a better life for you long-term to see if you really want to get into this space. Cause like you mentioned, right, a lot of investments get sold within 2 years, and this can be a great long-term lucrative space if you understand what you're getting into on the upfront side.
100%. So where do you see the short-term rental world going in the future? Because I started buying them in 2015. So I've seen some craziness here and there, but I've only bought in like true mature vacation markets. And I think where it's changing a lot, obviously, is in metro markets. Like Dallas just had that whole thing where they're banning them. And where do you see the short-term rental industry going from here? Because we had this big peak in 2021, too, of people buying, but they weren't what I would call true investors. They were just people who were like, wait, interest rates are 2.5%. How much is a payment on a beach house? I've always wanted a beach house. Let me slap it up on Airbnb and get rich while I'm not using it. And that's just not what this is. That's not a way to be successful long-term. So we're seeing a lot of those types kind of get out of the market because they didn't really treat it as the business that it is, which I think is, you know, the whole Airbnb bust thing. I think a lot of that contributed to that because people were like, oh, I'm just going to slap this thing up. Oh, cool. It doesn't have to look like anything. I'll just use my iPhone pictures that don't look good. And it's got Golden Girls furniture here and it's fine. It's been renting the way that it has. So whatever. So I think a lot of that is leaving the market, and we're, our asset class is actually kind of really establishing itself and being professionalized. But I would love to hear your opinion about that.
Yeah. So if you look at like just overall the world and short-term rentals, I always look at it from a global perspective. There's actually only, I think there's only like a little under 2 million listings in the US that are like full-time Airbnbs. And 95%, I think it's actually higher, but to be conservative, only 95% are managed by mom and dad type owners. And by all means, you know, like that's a great space to be in if that's what you want to do and rent your room. But if you look at it from a global perspective, there are millions of listings over in Europe and different parts of the world. And if you look at those cities, they're highly regulated. They're highly dependent on permits. There's a lot of different zoning and ordinances and things going on there. And there's levels of complexity. And I think you will see that here. A lot of the cities that we invest in, they are tweaking their rules in a good way, right? I think it's great when there's regulation because it means people have fought over things. The towns have, you know, created standards, and it allows investors to play in a safer arena, right? There's guardrails, there's rules, rather than investing in places where there's not much regulation. And so I think you have a lot of people afraid of permitting and rules. And I'm like, no, this is a good thing. This means that people have come up with standards, and it allows you to know how to be successful. And I think other parts of the world that have had short-term rentals, like I'm sure where you have been, you know, the Emerald Coast, I'm sure there's rules there because there's just been people investing and playing in that space for years. And so I think you're going to see a rise of that. I think, you know, in the places that we have seen a rise in that, the standard actually from the cities and the counties and the states is to operate professionally. Like you need in-person inspections and licenses, and you have certain tax, you know, expectations. And I think it's going to push for it to be more professional. So that's one thing. I also think you're going to see a lot of people get into this space on a more professional side of things. And I think you'll see people kind of raise their standards. And I hope so. Me, even being an Airbnb user, I don't trust other Airbnbs as much as I trust my own homes, you know, in terms of like bed qualities and how to open the doors and all these things. There's a lot of like confusion. So I'm hoping that more people enter the space. Might be like a surprising answer to hear, because I'm like, I welcome the competition. It's a really tough business to be in it. But I think that there's going to be some great players. And I think it depends on, like I mentioned before, the categories, right? Are you going to, you're going to have like a tiny home thing, or are you going to be in the same, you know, single family, or are you going to Airbnb multifamily? But I think it's going to continue to grow. I think people are going to be more professional, and I think more rules and standardized process from jurisdictions and from government are going to come into play. And I think overall it's going to help stabilize the uncertainty of the market as a whole.
Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot. And people get so freaked out about the word regulation. So like down here, Emerald Coast, we've got two cities right next door to each other. They're in two different counties. So Destin is Okaloosa County, 30A, Santa Rosa Beach is in Walton County. Destin has all kinds of hoops you have to jump through to get your license. They're never going to deny you a license. They'll just say, fix this thing. They just have a series of things they want to make sure are the way they need to be. They want to know who they need to contact. If something happens, you got to have signs out front with contact information, all that. Walton County, up until last year, same exact market, but had nothing. And when they started talking about imposing regulations in Walton County, everybody lost their minds. But when you look at what they were trying to do, it was just so everybody can figure out, who do we call if the house is on fire? How do we know? You know, things like that. And, you know, parking situations, because they've knocked down a bunch of small, older beach homes and put up these mega mansions, and they need like 30 parking spaces and, you know, regulating that kind of thing. And none of these are bad things. And I think people negatively associate the word regulations with bad things, but it's actually good. And I agree with that. But
I think it's good. I think the more the better, and it also creates a clear like idea of where you can invest and where you can't. Like in California, a lot of people got kicked out. San Diego, right? Because it got really strict and there were certain revenue caps and occupancy. And now people know, like, I shouldn't buy in San Diego. So yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Well, Sabrina, it's been a really, really great conversation. Thank you so much for coming on. We've got three questions that we ask everyone at the end of the show. So I'll go ahead and start with those. First one is, what advice would you give 20-year-old Sabrina?
Oh, man. 20-year-old Sabrina. I would tell her to enjoy the journey a little bit more. I think we all get caught up on the destination. So, and I'm still practicing that now. I think enjoying the journey is a big piece, and that there's time. There's time to do a lot of different things. You can get into this space when you're 50. You can get into this space when you're in your 20s. I think there's a lot to learn. So those are my two answers.
Cool. Second one, what advice do you have for a new short-term rental investor who's looking to get started today, which is, we're in January, end of January, 2024. So it is definitely a weird time in real estate.
I think to get really comfortable with exploring a lot of different options, and when I say options, like different markets, far places, remote places, close places, most advice when given to new investors in general is like, buy where you live. And I would encourage to look at everything, because I think right now with interest rates, buying opportunity, oversaturation, there's not a ton of markets that make sense. And I think if this is purely a non-emotional decision, there, it's going to be pretty clear where to invest versus not, for investment purposes only.
Great advice. And last question, a little more fun. What's your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
Favorite book that has impacted my mindset. I've been reading a bunch of very different books lately. I'll leave it off with the spiritual book, mindset book, probably The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. That book's okay. Really focused on like letting go. I think for a lot of control freaks who are like very go, 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 that was a book that really kind of calmed me down and allowed me to like really understand the business landscape without over controlling the process. Ironically, Cody Sanchez just shouted out that book a couple of months ago. So it's interesting to see other people in this space also reading similar things. So I'm not surprised if other people in this audience have also read that book.
Great recommendation. I have not read it. It's been on my list for a while, but I have fallen behind on my list. So I'm going to bump that up because you recommended it. And Cody Sanchez. Well, thanks again so much, Sabrina. If our listeners want to follow you, learn more about you /TechVestor, where can they do that?
You can, if you want to learn more about my journey and kind of follow us actively, you can follow us on LinkedIn under my name, Sabrina Guler, or through our TechVestor brand. If you want to book a call directly with the team, just go to techvestor.com and you can learn more about what we do and our process. And yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again so much for coming on. I really learned a lot today. Great conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.